On this week's Ludini Rock and Roll Circus podcast, we will tell you everything you always wanted to know about Aerosmith's Pump. Get ready to rock out with your talk out. It's the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. I am your host, the amazing, mysterious, and stupendous Ludini, and you're going to like it. And sitting next to me in the co-pilot's chair this evening is the lovely and talented Miss Lily V6 from Rock Rage Radio.
What's up?
What's up? So anyways, you are listening to Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Shout out to our first sponsor in the entire world. Wolf's Customs, yar. Wolf's Customs .online. The no reason, guys, to be getting up there and performing while you're doing your Zoom concerts or whatever you're doing, Skype concerts, whatever, and with the same old boring-looking instruments. Chris Thunderwolf Dodson and company can take your guitar, bass, ukulele, whatever it is that you play, and do really awesome custom finish on it that'll really make you stand out and give the audience something to look at while you're doing your thing. So check them out at wolfscustoms.online. Also want to send a shout out to Rock Rage Radio. Yes, Rock Rage Radio is your it's your one-stop shop for great rock and roll. It is great music 24/7, all day long, all night long. It's an internet radio station. You can get it anywhere in the world. Just go to rockrageradio.com and download the app, and then you're just set, right, Lily?
You just sit there and you listen.
You just sit there and you listen.
And be blown away. Your mind will be blown through your face.
Whoa. Your mind will be blown through your face.
Yes.
That sounds crazy.
It's epic.
Epic? It's epoch.
Epoch.
Okay, guys. Let's see. Anything else? Oh, yeah. Shout out to my brother from another mother, Keith the Hawk Hawkins, who is, I believe, in Nashville doing a recording this week. So that's exciting, and I'm glad for him. It's good that musicians are finding other ways to do stuff. I was talking to a guy I hadn't talked to in a while, a buddy of mine, J.D. Rao, who is a really good singer-songwriter and awesome guitar player from Pittsburgh. And we hooked up a few years ago when I was hosting a jam night at Moondogs over there in Blonox. And he's just a very cool dude. And he and I were hooked up, and he's like, we were talking this week, and he's like, right, no gigs, but I'm releasing two albums this year. Nice. I'm like, awesome, dude. Right?
Nice.
There's no, you know, so musician. So you're probably going to find like a lot of your favorite artists are going to have like more music out. So like, that's a way that you guys can enjoy new music. Just get into it. And, you know, the other thing is these giant TVs, these 70-inch TVs and stuff, they come way down in price. I can't remember. I was somewhere and somebody had this like 70-inch TV in this little room. And it was like being, it was like being at the movies or like at a concert. Last night, Stu and I watched, he had gotten the new Kenny Wayne Shepherd concert on Blu-ray. Yeah. And we got wasted and watched that and had a really good time. So there are alternatives, you know. The thing about being at home is you can pause it.
If you have to go to the bathroom.
If you have to go to the bathroom, you know what I mean?
Get a drink.
If you need to go get a drink. If you need to go beat the kids, you know, because they're making too much noise because you're trying to listen to some good music. You can do that at home. Right, Lily. Right. Lily's a big fan of shows, so am I. There is nothing like the energy of like being in that crowd and everybody rocking out.
Yeah, it's not the same now.
It's not the same right now.
I'm still loving it.
I'm going to give you guys a prediction, though. And this is not a political statement. I promise. I just think that this is the facts. Now that President Trump is done here in
a week-ish.
You're going to the coronavirus is going to magically dissipate.
It's going to go on the back burner.
It's going to go on the back burner. Your stuff is just going to open, and I'm going to say over the course of a year, you're going to see fewer people wearing masks. The social distancing thing isn't going to be quite what it was, and we're going to kind of, I'm going to say by this time next year, it's going to feel pretty much
the way,
at least that aspect of life. So be of good cheer, guys. That isn't a political statement. That I'm not bashing the president, or I'm not promoting the new president. I'm just stating my sort of interpretation. Yeah, my interpretation. And a lot of people agree with me on this. So
I agree with you.
There's a lot of people feel this is what's going to happen. So cheer up. Like, shows are coming back, so just relax.
Slowly.
It's going to happen. It sucks that you lost an entire year, but
speaking of, I did go to the Craft House on Saturday to see Made in America, and I'm going to tell you what, I wish we could have gotten up because they killed it. I'm telling you what, the dude, his name is Gordon Titsworth.
Gordon Titsworth.
That is his real.
His name is Gordon Titsworth.
That is his real name. That he plays Bruce Dickinson in this band. His voice is amazing. You need to go listen to him sing.
Listen, guys, look at me. I got the beard, I got the bald head, and I got the voice. I'm looking to start a Judas Priest tribute. So if you want to do a Judas Priest tribute, I'm your Rob Halford. I'm telling you, I can do it. Ask my vocal coach, Beth Clausen. I've been working with her for about 10 years.
You can do it.
Yeah, I can do it. I can do it, man. I'm a good front man. I'll wear leather all day long. I don't care. Right, Lily?
I'm sure you don't care. But we had to sit down the whole time, which sort of stunk because, you know, I'm always right in the pit going crazy. But it is what it is. It was a great show nonetheless. And I hope they come back. Yes, Jared Grease, Titsworth. That is his real last name. Look him up on Facebook, but it Titsworth. Is his real last name.
How much of them tits worth, baby?
Zing. But it was a great show.
Okay, well, great. If you're going to share your Craft House story, I went to the Craft House this weekend, too. I went Friday night to see my buddy's band, Up Past 10. They're real fun, upbeat, pretty much like 90s tribute. Or not tribute, but 90s like cover band. They do pretty faithful recreations of those songs. Pretty big band, I think 7-piece band. Very cool. So we had a really good time. There was some other friends of ours there, and it was fun to kind of fellowship and hang out. The chicken wings were pretty damn tasty.
Oh, their food's amazing.
You know what though? I made the mistake of Ubering out there.
Oh boy,
I hate driving out there. It's a shitty drive from here.
It's sort of just you have to go into suburbia, and it's this whole. There's no straight shot to get there.
It's
That's
not like
the
you get on 79, you know, get off exit 22.
It's
you know,
a lot
make
of turns.
The right and the left or right, and then you're there. It wasn't working that way. But it's a shitty drive. So we Ubered out there, and I told the person I was with, you know, hey, let's watch each other. Let's not drink too much. Well, she didn't drink very much at all, but I got destroyed and I had a terrible hangover.
You have that. You're very easily influenced.
I know because I was having a really good time and I hadn't been to a show in a long time. We were having some buddies there and everybody's buying each other drinks. And my band had to record next day. You know what I did? I got up in the morning and I went to breakfast and I was like, man, I feel terrible.
You wanted to die.
You know what I did? After I came back from breakfast, I'm down here getting things set up. I'm like, screw it. I'm having a drink.
That makes you feel better every time. Every time.
Absolutely did. Now, I didn't get wasted again, but
it just took off the edge.
Yeah, it just took that like, oh, really like, oh my God, I can't deal with life kind of thing going on. So I highly recommend that. If you have a hangover tomorrow after the end of the podcast, have a drink, you know, with your Rice Krispies. In fact, just put beer over your Rice Krispies, right?
Yeah. I do it all the time.
Yeah.
And every Wednesday morning.
You'll be right as rain. Ludini, tell him Ludini told you about it. If Ludini says it, right?
Then it's got to be true.
That's got
to
be true.
Just one real quick thing before we start into the actual podcast. I do want to give a shout out to Instakill who did open the show. It was their first show. They're from Pittsburgh. Amazing band. So I hope to see them soon at hopefully the Subalpine for one of my shows. So we'll see. Instakill.
Instakill. All right, guys. So we are going to talk about Aerosmith's Pump.
Pump.
Pump it up. Pump up the jams with Aerosmith.
This is one of my favorite bands, so you know I'm actually pumped to talk about it.
And we talked about this last... Before we get into the actual topic, Lily and I have a lot of fun after... Not in that way, get your minds out of the gutter. After the podcast.
We have a lot of discussions.
We sit and have like long discussions about all kind of stuff. And Lily has a very defined list of like her top five bands. So I think it's really interesting. What are your top five bands?
My very first.
Now, this is relevant because Aerosmith is in this list.
Right. Aerosmith is my number one favorite band. Nobody really thinks that or knows that.
I thought
that.
You told me Van Halen was.
No, Aerosmith's number one. Van Halen's number three because Motley Crue's number two.
So Aerosmith's one.
Motley Crue's number two, Van Halen's number three, ZZ Top, and this is always a toss-up, but it's usually Alice Cooper versus Def Leppard for okay. five.
So she has this top five.
Slash six.
Oh, my God. Here we go.
I could go on and on.
Top five and with an honorable mention. But let's just say the top three are always what again? Aerosmith,
Motley Crue, and Van Halen. Okay. Always.
So that's pretty cool. I don't have that. I went through about like a 5 year, like just anything Led Zeppelin. I just lost my mind over Led Zeppelin. They were my favorite band for like 5 years straight. And then all of a sudden I rediscovered Black Sabbath. I literally laid on the couch one night, you know, got pretty tuned in with some libations and went through every one of their albums. Now, I didn't like listen the whole album through, but like kind of,
you know, through yeah,
them,
I got
and
you.
Cruised through
I
them.
I got you.
And I was like, you know, I was like, I got like reborn into Black Sabbath, and they became my favorite band for like the next couple of
you,
years.
You go through stages. I go through stages myself. I'll sit there and listen to Roxette for 2 weeks, and that's all I'm going to listen to for the 2 weeks. And then I go back to Motley Crue, and then I jump over here to Eddie Money. Like, I go through these little stages, but my go-tos are solid.
Okay. So this is Lily's number one go-to.
Aerosmith. This is my number one go-to.
And so she's got to be pretty excited about talking about this. This is, give us the sort of biography then.
I will do a thing.
And then we're going to go track by track and then we'll rank them.
Okay. So the 10th studio album by Aerosmith, rock band, American rock band, released in September of 1989. So it did come out when I was born. I don't remember it when it first came out, obviously. So a couple years later, but it is my top favorite album by them. And I have all the songs are the reason why. It was remastered and reissued in 2001. I actually have two copies of this. I have one, just the regular CD, and I have one with the special leather case with the pretty purple, shiny, you know, writing on it, because I had to have it all.
Do you have it on vinyl?
I don't think so, which is odd, but I think that's a hard one to find, so that's why. Okay. I have Toys in the Attic on vinyl. certified sales of 7 million copies.
Do you remember the first greatest hits? The red cover with the white writing.
I have that one on album. Yeah,
I have
that
on vinyl. Yeah,
it's actually tied in sales with "Get a Grip," which came like right after that. So,
well, this is a trilogy, kind of. Well, "Permanent Vacation,"
yeah,
"Pump," and "Get a Grip." Were like they're sort of like, "We are back. Screw you. We're off the drugs. We're making great music." You know,
and it is a great album. It sort of has a lot of firsts for the band. That's their first Grammy Award with "Janie's Got a Gun." "Love in an Elevator" became the first Aerosmith song to hit number one on mainstream rock. It's the only Aerosmith album to date to have three top 10 singles on the Billboard Hot 100 and three number one singles on the mainstream rock track charts.
Three what?
Three top 10 singles.
Wow.
And three number one singles. And the album was the fourth best-selling album of 1990. It came out in 89, but it got the award in 1990. There were more than just the songs that are on there that are written for the album, as like most albums are. You write a bunch of songs, you decide what goes on it. They didn't put a lot of songs that they have on other albums on there. So Girls Got Something, Guilty Kilt, Rubber Bandit, Sedona Sunrise, which is a great song on the Devil's Got a New Disguise album. Kind of a ballad, but didn't make that album. And Sedona Sunrise was written in 89, but didn't come out until like the 2000s on an album, which I thought was interesting.
There is, if you really want to dig deep, but maybe after the podcast we'll watch this. There's a documentary, "The Making of Pump."
Oh yes, I have it on VHS.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm just sort of interjecting.
I'm not interrupting. I'm interjecting. I know everybody says that men interrupt, and I'm mansplaining. I'm not mansplaining. It is a podcast, so it's a discussion. Go ahead.
The reason for the album, the intention was to explore rawness that they missed with Permanent Vacation. They wanted to not be bound by any rules, which led to the musical interludes between each song. So every song flows into the next song with something in the middle. There's no like pauses or anything if you haven't heard the album.
Was that like a new thing for them?
Yeah, was brand new. They had never tried that before. I love it because of the zero silence. It just goes and goes and goes. Many of the lyrics are sexual, of course. It's Aerosmith. It's a rock band. So, Tyler said that was because he was making up for lost time because he spent using more drugs on the last album instead of having sex. So he was making up for that. He regretted not putting lyrics in the album booklet, though. They do not include the lyrics, something that happened because Geffen was afraid of Tipper Gore. That's why that happened. So, yay. Thank you. But at the time, youngsters from Motley Crue to Poison were doing their level, trying to take the heavy metal crown off of, you know, guys like Def Leppard and Bon Jovi. But Aerosmith took the crown off of everybody that year with this album because they had the year's best metal album. So,
well,
old men beating the young guys.
We're going to use the word metal very loosely. Very loosely.
It's hard rock.
It's, yeah.
But, yeah.
But the way it was categorized with the awards and everything,
it was
they put it in, they put it into that category. So, suck it up, Buttercup.
So, yeah. That's my spiel.
A couple of things that I found interesting about the sort of story behind this record is that Joe Perry sort of felt that, like, while Permanent Vacation was like a, you know, I mean, Permanent Vacation was really a triumph for them. I mean, like,
it's a decent album.
That's
for
a very
sure.
good album, and it really showed that, no. Aerosmith is good. We're good. The Done With Mirrors record, they really, like, they said that they felt like the Done With Mirrors record was like, they were kind of like refinding themselves. They weren't sure who they were again after they, you know.
I always say that wasn't finished.
Yeah, that's what Joe Perry felt as well. And they liked Permanent Vacation a lot, and they were very grateful that it was so, you know, so big. But Joe said that they put 13 songs on that album, and like almost like most of them, they never played live.
That's true.
That's what they did. So there was a real effort with the next record with Pump to, like, you know, really, 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 really hone the songwriting. And they worked again with Bruce Fairbairn. And Steven Tyler talks about how, you know, he says by the time they're done with Permanent Vacation, like, they weren't speaking to Bruce because he was such a taskmaster in the studio. He was just like, no, do it again. That's wrong. No, move this over here. I don't like that. Stop doing it that way. Steve, you're out of tune. Joe, don't play that. That's the wrong guitar lick there. Don't put that. But he's trying. That's the job of the producers, to hone that thing. The guys come in with the raw materials, and the producer works with the band to really get it, you know, exactly right. And so they were like, you know, but they couldn't wait to get away from him. They go on to the tour, but like, just, I think it's just a couple weeks after the tour of Permanent Vacation, they were in meetings with him. He was like, Steven Tyler says, he says, you know, after a couple of months, I found myself calling Bruce on the phone to ask him how I was doing and stuff like that. We kind of missed him. And they got, you know, they sat down and started honing. And this is where Joe Perry was like, look, guys, we got to do something where it's more cohesive. Like, that was a great, great start with Permanent Vacation. But we need something that where, like, it's like all killer, no filler. That is really what they were going for on Pump. I think Pump is a masterpiece. It has, like, some of the greatest Aerosmith moments.
For sure.
This
is also the album where, now, Steven Tyler and Joey Kramer never really got along, but Steven Tyler was, prior to being a lead singer, a drummer, so he really was hard on him during this album, and he would, like, literally take the drumsticks off of him, smack him with him, do the drum part, and be like, you're a moron. It's all in his book, Joey Kramer's book, Hit Hard, talks about all of that, how he and Steven just, Steven basically abused him, according to Joey Kramer in the book. So, yeah, this was also that.
it's a really great record. It has two of my absolute favorite things at Aerosmith. Probably my favorite Aerosmith song is on this album, which is The Other Side.
That is
my absolute favorite Aerosmith. That is my favorite Joe Perry guitar solo. It's my favorite Joe Perry guitar tone. That just knocked me out. And Loving an Elevator, the harmonies on that when they do that thing and think going down. Yeah. How many takes did that take in the studio to nail that? Then I mean, it shows that those guys are real singers. I don't know if they have, and on any of their last, on their any of their like records from the '70s, if they had that type of singing. I mean, yes, Sweet Emotions got the good harmonies and stuff and everything, but that really is like taking it to another level, in my opinion, on that Love in an Elevator. I was like,
yeah, that's
holy cow. I remember just being knocked out by that, and it knocked a lot of people out. There's, you know, there's been studies done that having harmonies like that, you know, no matter what genre, it can be metal, it can be country, it can be whatever, that does something to people's brain, and people absolutely respond to it. So if you got a band and you're going like, how can we kind of get an edge? See if you guys can work on harmonies. If you can do that, it is something that people really just, they just respond to. That's the success behind bands like the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and that. It's like that, it kind of tickles your ear or something. You know what I mean? It just goes like, oh, that's so neat.
It sounds so good.
Yeah, it makes you feel good. So anyway, but anyways, just killer. So how do we want to do this? Are we going to go song by song?
Yeah,
we're going to go song by song.
Song by song.
Let's start at the beginning. It's a very, very good place to start, as Julie Andrews said.
Young Lust is the album opener. Steven Tyler was frustrated and partly in denial about being compared to the Rolling Stones' Mick Jagger, so he took out his frustration in his songwriting. He told Rolling Stone the song's lyric, "Happy just to be in lust, never have to eat no dust," about what it was like to come out of the ashes. It's about using what he's got, not thinking that he'll ever be as good as the Stones, but if someone put him down. About the Stones back then, he was a little afraid because he didn't want anyone to say that he looked like Mick. I get it. Perry had to come up with a leadoff track, something that sounded like a dinosaur eating cars was the quote on that one. And I agree. I think it sounds like a it is a pure sex song. I love it. It just is in your face. According to Joe Perry, the song is about retaining your youthful exuberance and passion for music into middle age, and the band was well under their 40s at the time that this came out, so kind of like a rejuvenation, I guess. So,
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, is this the first record where they were clean, or were they clean on Permanent Vacation?
I think they were clean on Permanent Vacation. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So, we're like, yeah, they traded the drugs for the sex.
Hey, I mean, the lesser of two evils, maybe.
You don't get a sex hangover, do you?
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Oh, anyways. This is a favorite on Ozzy's Boneyard.
Young Lust?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They play. And every time they say, you know, the first time I heard Young Lust by Aerosmith, I'm like, wait a minute, is this a cover of the Pink Floyd song?
There's actually quite a few songs out there in the rock world called Young Lust. But
it's a
those are the
popular
two.
Popular topic amongst rock and rollers. Do you remember when rock? This was when rock was about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
Yes,
that's what it was all about. What this was before, you know, everybody was depressed
and getting political
and doing heroin.
Yes, music to slit your wrist to.
Yeah,
as I call it.
Yeah, that. Yeah, this predates that. This was these were the good old days. Okay, and so Young Lust. What's
this
the next
goes time? Right into FINE.
F-I-N-E.
And it just literally just at the end of that song goes and goes right into the song. And I'm going to have to swear, sorry to anyone listening, but the F-I-N-E means fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional.
Now that could go more with the 90s.
It could, for sure. It was released as a promotional single to rock radio in 89 and reached number 14 on the mainstream. Super upbeat hard rock song, very raunchy lyrics. Focuses on youth angst and lasciviousness, which I love that word.
Licentiousness and lustful.
And the verse features
so naughty.
The verse features "I'm ready" after each line, suggesting sexual arousal or being ready for sex.
No. Oh, my.
Tipper Gore was actually mentioned in this song as an all right person, as well as several other non-specific people. It was one of the potential titles brainstormed for the album that became Pump. So it was going to be called, possibly be called Fine, but was blocked by Geffen AR man John Kolodner. I don't know why. I guess he liked Pump better. If you do look closely on the album, F-I-N-E is on one of the trucks. So it did make the cover anyway. Liv Tyler also referenced this as a nod to her father at the end of the movie Super. I don't know if you saw that movie. During her scene with the rehabilitation group session, she is heard stating, "Fucked up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional."
Ah.
The song is also featured in Walt Disney World's Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith, in the coaster car with a license plate, Bye Bye, which also features Young Lust as and a
real. What?
Did you ever ride the ride at Disney World?
Oh, okay, but it's, I thought she was in a Disney movie.
No, it's a Disney movie. Did I say that?
Walt Disney
World's Rock and Roller Coaster starring Aerosmith.
Okay. Well, does Walt Disney understand what the song's about?
I don't think they care. it's money. They also have the reworked version of Love in an Elevator that is retitled Love in a Roller Coaster. The ride is super fun. You're in this big, long stretch limo, and they do play the songs. You're going to a concert, basically. So there's all these like signs for like places in California, like Burbank and Hollywood and blah, blah, blah. It goes from like 0 to 60 in like 3 seconds. When you first walk in, there's these holograms of the band talking to you saying, get in the limo and, you know, have a great time.
That's all Aerosmith.
Yeah. So it's a great ride. And it's a great
song. That's fun. That sounds really fun.
And that's what I have for that.
Okay. I have a tidbit I can't believe you didn't mention.
It's probably something I know, but go ahead.
But no, I'm going to mention it at the end. What's the next track?
Going Down / Love in an Elevator. Released in August 1989 as the lead single of the album. Peaked at number 5 on the Billboard. Reached number 1 on the Hot Mainstream. And Steven Tyler is said to have come upon the concept of the song while researching famous battleships.
What?
Yes. Specifically, an instance on the Russian battleship Navarin, in which one of the crew was famously quoted as the ship was going down. Tyler claims the song...
But it's a double entendre.
Right. Tyler claims...
I've never got to use that phrase...
There it
that
is.
Word on, that phrase on the podcast, double entendre. Thank there you, Aerosmith.
Tyler claims the song's lyrics were inspired by an experience he had at a hotel in which he was making out with a woman in an elevator, and they started having sex as the doors opened. It felt like a lifetime waiting for the doors to close. I mean, I'd keep going. Who cares? In the video, the female elevator operator is Playboy model and former wife of Nikki Sixx, Brandi Brandt. It is a fan favorite and is well known among mainstream audiences. The song received a Grammy Award nomination in 1990 for Best Rock Performance by a duo or group, but lost out to the Traveling Wilburys.
That is, disparaging the Traveling Wilburys. Those guys are, you know, legendary artists, but I've got to go with Aerosmith on this one.
I would have to agree, because what was the Traveling Wilburys song? The one
for this song was...
So
fun. It was on heavy rotation on MTV. Heavy rotation. You young guys, you don't understand, man, how freaking cool that was. You have no idea. When you have access to something at the touch of a button at your fingertips, you do. I sound like an old man, but you just don't have the appreciation you did with sitting there around with your friends,
waiting
to see your favorite video. They're going to play my video.
It's like play Aerosmith, play Aerosmith. Oh man, it's Salt and Pepper. Why?
Don't go chasing waterfalls.
Well, in this case, it was Push It.
So, okay, Going Down, Love and Another. What do you got next?
Monkey on My Back. Make sure that's correct. Yes. It was released as a promotional single in 1990, reached number 17. The song is one of Aerosmith's most straightforward songs about how the band overcame drug abuse and addiction. It is the one of the few songs on Pump with profane lyrics in the line, "Feeding that fucking monkey on my back." But Tyler said he needed to make use of the word to be harsher. He felt that would make kids' ears perk up and listen to the lyrics and the message of the song, which was more effective than telling the consequences of drug use by simply just saying no. So it has been performed on Saturday Night Live and MTV Unplugged. And I think it's one of the more underrated songs on the album. I don't know how many people who actually talk about this song that much, but I like it. So
we are about halfway in. So let's take a minute and acknowledge those who are hanging out with us tonight.
We have Bill Damiano.
love you.
Chris and Raven.
We love you guys, Chris and Raven.
Wolf and Raven.
Wolf and Raven.
Jared Grease.
Jared.
And Bobby Lamondi.
Bobby Lamondi.
Those are our watchers.
All right, gentlemen. What do you got next? What's the next track?
The Water Song and Janie's Got a Gun. Released as the second single on the album, peaked at number 4. Song was this is the one that won the Grammy in 1990 for Best Rock Performance by a Duo or a Group. It is preceded by a 10-second instrumental called Water Song, which features the work of the instrumentalist Randy Rain Reusch. I don't know if you guys know this, but he did a lot of those, like, in-between things with the weird instruments.
Okay.
Where was it in here? He uses a glass harmonica in this case, a wind gong, and bull roars to produce the special effects heard at the start of the song. Tyler came up with the title and melody before he knew what direction he wanted to take with the song. Took him 9 months to finish the lyrics. After he read a Newsweek article on gunshot victims, he was able to connect the song with the theme of child abuse and incest, because he got really angry that nobody was paying homage to those who were abused by mom and dad. So he wanted to include that in his album. The line, "he jacked a little bitty baby," was originally, "he raped a little bitty baby." Of course, that was changed for reasons understood.
That's what the song is about. They're trying to make a point, but yeah.
And the music video was directed by David Fincher.
Directed by David Fincher, starring Kristen.
Yes.
Datilo. Nicholas Guest played the father, and Leslie Ann Warren, who's been in tons of stuff, played Janie's mother. She's the one. Is she the one that gets the gun and shoots the guy in the video?
Oh my gosh, I don't know who shoots. I haven't seen the video in so long.
She's been in tons of movies like Clue.
She was in Cinderella, which I loved because that's one of my favorite.
She
movies.
Was hot in Clue. Anyways, another what major video?
Yeah, that was their huge song on the album. That's the one that won them the Grammy. Has a great video.
It won them a Grammy.
I'm obviously drunk.
I'm usually the one with the misspeaking here. So,
hey, I'm allowed once.
You know, it's great. I appreciate it. Making me feel better.
You're welcome. But this was their huge song on the album. This is the one that got them all the accolades. Huge.
All right, what's after the Water Song, Janie Got a Gun?
We're on side two for those of you who have vinyl still.
And cassette tapes.
And cassette tapes. Dulcimer Stomp / The Other Side. Released as the fourth single, songwriting team of Holland Dozier Holland were eventually given songwriting credit on the song after threatening to file suit over what they perceived to be similarities between The Other Side and their song Standing in the Shadows of Love. So they got in trouble for this song. It's a powerful song. It has about a couple on the rocks. One of the only times The Other Side didn't mean heaven and hell. Usually when you talk about The Other Side, it's, you know.
Correct.
You know, heaven or hell. It was used in Tony Scott's 1993 film True Romance. Great film. Go see that. For the dulcimer stomp section, an Appalachian dulcimer was used. It's a fretted string instrument with 3 or 4 strings and was played by Randy Rain Reusch for the song.
Those of you who are fans of Led Zeppelin know what a dulcimer is.
I was explaining it to the children.
It's a lot of I'm just expounding on that. It's heard on a lot of Zeppelin sort of folky English folk kind of influence stuff. Jimmy Page knew his way around a dulcimer.
He knows what's up.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he knows his way around a lot of instruments, including his own.
Monster guitar work by Joe Perry on this song. Like I said, the beginning of the podcast is like one of my absolute, is my absolute favorite Joe Perry performance period. I mean, I grew up with Walk This Way was my certain like first kind of like realization of Aerosmith, and Sweet Emotion, Dream On, those just classic tracks. And I was a fan of the guitar work on those albums. Hey, listen, Joe, and I got to say, we got to give a shout out to Brad Whitford. Brad is the kind of like redheaded stepchild in the band, I think, that people just, everybody's like, Joe Perry and Steve Tyler, you know, but Brad's a little more laid back, but he's a massive musician as well. And he's a songwriter.
And he's super nice. I met him one time.
Yeah. I mean, he's, you know, he's, let's see here. There's one or two. Like Hoodoo Voodoo Medicine Man, that's a Tyler and Whitford composition. So he's definitely a songwriter as well. He's there's a great video on YouTube with Brad Whitford, Joe Bonamassa, Derek Sherinian, Jimmy Barnes doing "Lazy" by Deep Purple, and it is kick ass. Go check it out. You're like, it's a Joe Bonamassa, Jimmy Barnes thing, and you're like, well, there's another guitar player. Who's that? Oh shit, that's Brad Whitford. Oh, cool. And Brad's just laid back. He gets a small solo. He just like chills, does his thing. It's great. So shout out to Brad Whitford. So we don't want to neglect Brad, but the other side is some of my favorite guitar work by Aerosmith. Like I said, it's just a dynamite song. Great vocals as well. Well, and as I'm thinking about the melody, take me to the other side, standing in the shadows of love. Mm-hmm. I can see where there might be a thing. Yeah, maybe. I think they were too nice and gave that up too quick, but that's my opinion. So what's next, Lil?
Next is My Girl.
My Girl.
Not that
talking
one.
Talking about My Girl.
Wrong one. Underrated song. Perry states the song is an Aerosmith tribute to all of the great bands of the 60s with the sound. Tyler tends to always write songs about the ladies, so he's with at the time, and I think this is one of them. He's singing about Sadie, a girl who feeds his desire, who's a spitfire, who he obviously does the dirty with in the song. And by the lyrics, she's a little kinky. And she seems to be everything to him. And he is, whenever he's in love, he's super in love. And you can tell on the albums when he writes the song.
I'm sorry, but I do not think that it's sexist that men are inspired to write songs about women they are, insanely hot for.
I would love somebody to write a song about me. But I have never heard this one live.
And it's all kind of an old-fashioned idea at this point. But I think it's very cool.
Well, some women would be like, that's dumb now. But anyway, this is one of the ones I've never heard live. Would love to hear it live. It's super poppy and catchy.
Fun.
Good song.
All right, cool. So we got My Girl and what? Let's take a look here, guys. Oh, we're down to the last three. Look out. Tick-tock, tick-tock. So what's next, girl?
Next is Don't Get Mad, Get Even. This is one of those ones we were talking about with a no rules that they were trying to go for on the album. The intro to the song has a didgeridoo, which is an Australian instrument. Basically, it's this long bamboo-like, I guess, pipe where they have to, it's blowing, but it's not. There's like circular breathing going on and everything. It's super complicated. But this is again performed by Randy Rainroich and goes into Steven Tyler's crooning and harmonica playing. Very bluesy, slower beginning on the song. And then it goes into super rock for the chorus. If you aren't an Aerosmith fan, you probably aren't really familiar with this song because they don't really play it live ever, very rarely. It's pretty straightforward that it's about getting even with who wronged you at the time or anyone. And yeah, there you go. It's to the point.
What's more blues than that?
Right.
Exactly. All right. And we mentioned this song a little bit earlier. Hoodoo Voodoo Medicine Man.
Yep. Originally titled Buried Alive or News for You, Baby. These were the two titles prior to Hoodoo Voodoo Medicine Man. Another song where it's sort of no rules. It starts with some spoken word by Tyler stating he was sort of like brought up in the wild with nature. There's some animal and tribal noises going on in the song, which I sort of love. I'm like, my sister will tell you that I'm super obsessed with animal noises and tribal noises in songs. then it goes into the regular song. It starts off slow.
Do you like that band, Canitis?
I don't know what that
Never
is.
Heard of it. No. This is a heavy metal band. The lead singer is literally a dog.
Oh.
And it barks.
No.
And they get the dog barks over the, and that's the lyric. That's the vocalist.
No.
You never heard of Canines?
I don't think so.
You got to check them out. Wow, Lily.
Starts off slow, then goes into an aggressive sound. He's angry that we're pissing on Mother Earth and ruining what we have been given. It's spoken from the point of view of a medicine man. Some people think it's the weird song on the album. It is kind of weird.
It sounds weird. It's made with animal noises. That is weird. I know you like Aerosmith, fair band, but it's weird.
Again, never heard this one live. Would love to hear it performed live. There's a Ty Keane played in the song by Randy Rain, which is a laol, L-A-O, mouth organ with bamboo pipes that are blown into. So he uses a lot of really interesting instruments you wouldn't normally use.
Okay, now we're going to talk about, this is interesting, this last song, because this was a huge hit. Sure but was. It's the last song on the album. You would go like, huh? Also, this is the second song on the album where they brought in, and we sort of glossed over this when we talked about F-I-N-E. They brought in the songwriter Desmond Child. Mm. Desmond Child is the guy you bring in when you go like, we got a pretty good record, but we really need the big hits. And Desmond is the guy most famously, well, he wrote Rut It Takes, which we're going to talk about here in a minute, but he wrote Hate Myself for Loving You and a bunch of these like big rock type tunes. He's got this kind of rock thing that he can do, a pop and a rock thing, and they bring him in with people like, he's worked with Cher and a bunch of folks like that. So good, let's talk about What It Takes.
The power ballad on the album, third single, A&R man John Kolodner described the song as a fucking masterpiece. During live performances, Tyler sings the first verse a cappella and belts out a signature scream right before the chorus. I've heard this done 10 times because it's usually one of the last songs they play live. The album version of the song is followed by an untitled hidden track with a twangy sound. N-A-W is used. It's a gourd mouth organ. Played once again by Randy Rain. There are two videos for the song. One features the band performing in the Longhorn Ballroom. The other is taken from scenes from The Making of Pump, which Lou mentioned earlier. It's a film which documented the recording process of the Pump album. The song contained numerous references to other Aerosmith songs in its lyrics, and Aerosmith is really noted for doing this all the time. They always mention other songs or albums in their song they're singing about. So they spell out F-I-N-E in the second verse. They mention Heart's Doing Time. Sit from Heart's Doing Time, another lyric, and Leave Your Life to the Toss of the Dice relates to Love in an Elevator, betting on the dice I'm tossing. So they're super known for doing that sort of thing.
So very good. That is the list. Let's real quick, let's take a couple of minutes, take a minute or so and rank the songs. And we're just, since Lily, this is her favorite band. Lily?
You want me to do number 10?
Which one is number 10?
Don't Get Mad, Get Even. And first of all, I love all these songs, but I had to rank them apparently. So Don't Get Mad, Get Even is number 10.
That's number 10. What's the 9?
9 is going to be Water Song, Janie's Got a Gun. Just because it is a little bit overplayed.
Okay.
Number 8 is going to be My Girl.
8 is My Goyal.
7 is going to be What It Takes.
Okay. Oh, big video, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Another big video.
They got two videos for that one. But yeah. 6 is Hoodoo Voodoo Medicine Man. I'm going to give 5 to Monkey on My Back.
All right. Monkey on My Back. Number 5.
That is number 5. Number 4.
I thought you said it was number 4.
That one's number 5.
What's number 4? What's number 4?
Number 4 is
going to... That's
gonna,
what I meant.
Like, okay. I thought you meant next number 5. Yeah. Number 4 is Going Down, Love in an Elevator.
Okay. Big number 4. What's number 3?
Young Lust.
Young Lust. Not Old Lust, but we'll take what we can get.
Number 2 is Dulcimer Stomp, The Other Side for me. And number 1 is F-I-N-E.
I knew that was going to be your number 1.
I love that song.
Cool. So the top 3 on Lily's list on this album is number 3 is Young Lust, number 2 The Other Side, and number 1 F-I-N-E. If you disagree, you are obviously wrong because Lily said, right?
You can argue with me all you want. I will argue with you back. I'm a woman. I'll win. I have the boobies.
I have the boobies, so I make the rules, right? So there you have it, guys. Aerosmith's Pump, great album. Something that I did not mention, a couple things I did not mention when we were talking earlier, a little bit of business. Please go to lulombardimusic.com. We're offering a free EP. Some of the music that you're hearing in the background is on that EP. So you can check that out. Go to lulombardimusic.com. It also gives you access to our private Facebook group where, you know, this is the folks we're talking to when we do shout outs and things like that. You get to make, you know, throw some comments at us. And very often we do take suggestions. We love hearing from the you guys and what you guys like and what you think of for good topics and stuff like that. I think I have a good topic for next time. I'll talk to you afterwards. And I also want to, we mentioned this last week and I want to mention it again because it is still going on. And that is SOS2020PGH.org. Lily, I think you know a little bit about this this charitable organization and what they're doing. Do you want to talk about this for a quick second?
So this SOS is Save Our Stages. It's a benefit to help the venues that are struggling, predominantly in the Pittsburgh area due to the COVID pandemic shutting down a lot of the venues, started by Eric Roger of Royal Honey. And it includes most, not all, but most of the musicians in Pittsburgh singing on the album. So, and I believe that just came out on Friday.
Yeah, they officially released the song on Friday. And if I'm going to talk to Eric and see if we're allowed, there's not going to be any kind of copyright issues. I would like to actually play it for you guys. So I'm going to hit him up. Maybe we can get him on next week's show or something.
Maybe.
Have them come and hang out with us. So, this is a band who will remain nameless. This is a band I really like, and I don't want to say their name, but they've been bugging me to be on the show. And I told them, you know, we do the show every Tuesday night. So I'm like, so they're like, you got to hit us up after first of the year. We really want to come on. So I sent them the dates, and they're like, oh, can we do it Friday? I'm like, no.
We don't do it Friday.
We do it Tuesday nights. Pick a Tuesday, and we'll do it with you.
No offense, but Lily reserves her Fridays for other stuff.
And the other thing I want to mention real quick, because I'm really excited, is Rockin' Pod 2021 is happening this year. It's going to be in August, the first weekend in August, and the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus will definitely be represented. I'm definitely going. I'm going to try to see if we can get coordinate with Lily and Keith, if they can come too. We'll have a booth there, and it's going to be a lot of fun. A lot of great rockers are there. They perform. It's tons of fun. There's a lot of great energy there. A lot of folks selling memorabilia and things like that. So stay tuned for more information about that. I told Chris, the guy that organizes it, that we would like promote it and let people know about it. So more information will be coming soon on Rockin' Pod. So stick around for that. Okay, guys, let's talk about, before we wrap up today, I already clicked that link. I don't need it twice. I always love to do this. This is one of my favorite portions of the show, and that is This Day in Music. So this is where we go, and the day that we're doing this is January 12th.
Yes.
So this is all the stuff that happened on January, not all the stuff, but...
Some of the stuff.
Yeah, some of the cooler stuff. You can go, there's actually a website, thisdayinmusic.com, and you can get more information there. On this day in 1964, the Beatles appeared on the ATV show Sunday Night at the London Palladium performing I Wanna Hold Your Hand.
Aww.
This Boy, All My Love and Money, and Twist and Shout. The what is that?
I don't know. I don't know what that word's supposed to be.
I don't know. Brian Forsyth, I think, hosted it. The Beatles appeared on the show on October 13th, 63. Their fee had been £250. Now, just 3 months later, their fee was $1,000.
Wow.
And this day in 1969, Led Zeppelin's debut album was released. Yes!
Oh, love Led Zeppelin. It's Compare. It's their host. You're right. Oh. That's what that word is.
Debut album was released in the UK, recorded at Olympic Studios in Barnes, London. The album took only about 36 hours of studio time.
Oh, is that all?
When's the last time you listened to Led Zeppelin 1? Done in 36 hours. Amazing. Amazing. How long did Chinese Democracy take? Okay, exactly.
10 years.
Yeah. Guys, Axel, if you're listening, 36 hours.
It took 9 months for Steven Tyler to write one song on Pump, so...
The album spent a total of 71 weeks on the UK chart. God bless you. This day in 1974, Steve Miller, as they say in Pittsburgh, Steve Miller. The Steve Miller Band were at number one on the U.S. singles charts with The Joker, the group's first of three number ones. It reached number one on the UK chart in 1990. Wow, it took a little while. The 1975 Little Feat, the first night of UK tour, kicked off under the banner of Warner Brothers Music Show. It featured Little Feat, Montrose, great band, Tower of Power, or as they say in Pittsburgh, Tower of Power, the Doobie Brothers, and Graham Central Station also released an album sampler featuring all acts. It was priced at $1.17.
Huh.
69 pence or $1.17. The whole album with all those bands on it was $1.17.
Man.
Okay, here's some epic stuff. EMI issued a statement saying it felt unable to promote the Sex Pistols records in view of the adverse publicity generated over the last 2 months. Mm-hmm. This day in 1977. This day in 1977, Rolling Stones' Keith Richards was fined £750 for possession of cocaine. If you want to hang out, you got to take her out. Was found in his car after the guitarist had been involved in a car crash.
So $1,300, he paid that off and said bye.
Yeah.
Have a nice day.
I think in 1977, can you hear the ice clinking in my glass? $1,300 was probably a bit considered a lot
but
more.
But still, it's Rolling Stones.
On this day in 1977, Stuart Copeland, the Police, had their first rehearsal held at the drummer Stuart Copeland's London flat with Henry Padovani on guitar. Good thing they went with Andy Summers. On this day in 1981, Bob Dylan, it was reported that the White House had expanded its record library by including albums by Bob Dylan, Kiss, and the Sex Pistols. There's all some kind of strange bedfellows there, right? this day in 1992, Bob Geldof was arrested after a disturbance on a Boeing 727, which had been grounded for 5 hours at the Stansted Airport. That's
he's
not
a troublemaker anyway.
Yeah, that Bob Geldof and his Save the World. AC/DC did some stuff on this day, and what did Liam Gallagher do? Liam Gallagher from Oasis.
Who knows?
He could have done anything.
But he got in trouble.
I want to get over to birthdays real quick here. Ray Price, a singer, famous singer-songwriter, was born this day in 1926. Long John Baldry, poet, folk artist, died and was born this day in 1941. George Duke, American composer, singer, a producer, has released over 30 solo albums. Born this day, worked with people like Frank Zappa, people like that. Any good hard rocking guys? Charlie Gillingham, keyboards from the American rock band Counting Crows, was born this day in 1960. Zach De La Rocha.
Oh, yeah.
From Rage Against the Machine. It's funny how Rage Against the Machine wasn't raging against any machines while, you know.
While they were prominent.
While certain political factions were in charge, but as soon as ones they didn't like were in charge, they immediately started releasing albums.
Legit.
Yeah. But anyways, guys, that is This Day in Music. If you go to thisdayinmusic.com, you can get more information because there is always more information out there.
There's more to be had.
Oh, crap.
Also, I would like to promote there. I have a show coming out on Saturday. Coming out. I have a show happening on Saturday.
She's coming out.
At the Subalpine.
She wants the world to know.
At the Subalpine. It's the first of my monthly Lily Six's Live Saturdays for Hot Licks with Lily Six and Rock Rage Radio. The first one will feature Roadkill, Yigga Digga, Divine Tragedy, and Burned. These are the bands that are going to be there on Saturday.
Oh, Yigga Digga.
Yeah.
Who's in that band?
I don't know their names.
Oh, man, I know those guys.
Well, they're going to be there on Saturday at the Subalpine in Turtle Creek. It's a $12 cover. Cash at the door. If you bought tickets, you're an idiot because that's a scam. Drinks are cheap. Good place to hang out. Beautiful new stage. So come out and hang out with us. I'm going live on Rock Rage Radio for the show. And, yeah, do that.
Hold on a second.
He's looking for something about
I
you.
I know that I know these guys.
Look on
Tom
Facebook.
Dillon, Chris Simonic, Bill Colflesh.
Okay, I know
Scott
that guy.
Pegram. I know you guys. How do I know? I know you guys. I definitely know you guys.
Well, they will be playing at the show on Saturday.
Cool, man. That's cool. Awesome,
man. Good stuff.
So there's like, soon as like I said, this stuff's already kind of getting restarted.
Yeah.
So I
will be doing a monthly show at the Subalpine.
Yes. So I will just throw this out. I was thinking about this today. I was driving home. I've been kind of addicted to First Wave on Sirius, which plays all this like 80s new wave stuff.
Sure.
And I heard songs in this past week that I haven't heard since I was like 15 years old. I heard the song Fashion by David Bowie that I haven't heard in years.
Yeah.
On the way home, and I started thinking about, you know, David Bowie, what like a diverse catalog of music. Like
mm-hmm.
There's a sonically like all over the place.
Yeah.
So what I thought maybe we should talk about next week is this.
I'm ready.
10 artists, the top 10 artists who covered the most sonic territory throughout their career.
Okay.
So David Bowie's on that list, right? And who else? Like Prince.
Oh my gosh.
People
yeah.
like that You know, and I'm not talking about bands like Van Halen where they changed their singer and had a difference. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the artists that were really kind of like really eclectic. Like you almost didn't know what from album to album kind of what they were going to do.
Okay.
I think the Beatles are like that. The Beatles liked it legit. All kind of, you know, you never kind of knew where they were going to go. So I would like to do, I think that would be a good topic for next week.
Okay.
So those of you that are hanging out in the inner circle right now, think about some artists like that and post them in there, and we'll talk about them as well, and we'll definitely give you shout outs on that. There is just okay, we can't do that. There's a lot of them that are just all over the place. You never knew what they were. And that was really cool. I understand. And here's what happens too. When you are that kind of artist, it's risky for you because you don't know, like AC/DC essentially has done the same album
100 times
since the beginning.
They haven't changed their sound ever.
So it's like nothing against,
but it works
guys,
for them.
But it works for them. They play it safe and that's cool. But you got to figure an artist that like is constantly changing, always wants to evolve. They run the risk of alienating their audience. This is this band will not be included on the list, but this is kind of an example of, like, think about what Metallica did on the Black Album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they went from a kind of bigger, sort of progressive, bigger parts, you know, longer songs and everything, to going, like, let's trim it down. Let's do something really, like, you know, lean and mean, in your face, you know, 3 minutes and we're out kind mm-hmm. of songs. And they're still people that hate them over that.
Yeah.
There's people that have never forgiven them for that. I mean, I remember, like, you know, they did, and then they followed it up with a couple of, albums after that. And I remember seeing people online at the time. The social media thing. This is how old I am. The social media thing hadn't really started yet. There were forums, and one of the forums I hung out on was Harmony Central, and there were all kind of Metallica haters on there. If this band doesn't get back to metal on the next album, I am writing them off. I'll never, I'm going to throw all their albums out.
Meanwhile, those are the guys that were at the concert that I was at last.
So, and another topic might be, for the future, might be 10 bands that change their albums, that change their style and completely lost their fan base.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And there are artists that did, made giant changes and lost their... And then there are artists that changed their genre and became huge. Like Katy Perry, who started out as a Christian artist.
I mean, even Judas Priest, they were psychedelic first.
Yeah. that's why I changed. But I think there's some artists we could talk about. You know, Pantera became way more successful. So I don't know. There's a couple of different show topics in that whole situation. Anyways, guys, you have been listening to the Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Go to LouLombardiMusic.com. No, not Ludini Rock and Roll Circus.com. Right now, that website is in limbo. Good things are coming. I'm talking with my business partners, and we are going to come up with some very cool stuff for the circus in the coming year. Right now, I'm building a podcast production business, which we're launching here in the next couple weeks. So that has taken up all my time. So once that gets launched, then it's going to be down to what are we going to do with the circus and how are we going to... What I want to do, guys, is take this from a fun hobby to a business so that... These guys, Keith and Lily, get money each week for doing this, that it's a legitimate thing. So we are talking about how we might do something with that. So right now, LudiniRockAndRollCircus.com, I believe if you go there, I don't believe it's like a placeholder page. We have the domain, but we don't have it. So where you want to go is LouLombardiMusic.com. You get a free EP. You get access to our inner circle group where... As you hear us giving shout outs to people and people giving us suggestions, that's where we find out about that. Shout out to wolfscustoms.online one more time. Get a custom paint job done on your musical instrument. And thank you so much to Rock Rage Radio for, being an affiliate and having us. I know we have a much bigger audience and, I get people, I'm getting random people now signing up for the inner circle. That I'm not even doing anything. So it's just they're just hearing. Good. Well, because we're talking about it, they're hearing it, and they're going to check it out. And Lily, why don't you talk about your show real quick?
My show is Hot Licks with Lily Six on Thursdays, 6 p.m. Eastern time. I do interviews. I play a lot of new songs, a lot of local stuff. You'll love it. So check it out. Get the app for free or go to rockridgeradio.com.
All right, guys. Thank you guys so much for hanging out, and we'll catch you on the next Ludini Rock and Roll Circus. Have a great week, guys.